Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Honors Element. Morgan Vincent here, and as always, I'm joined by Ben Lear. Today, we are digging into dynamic equilibrium in gases. Ben, when you say dynamic equilibrium in class, I still picture two rival sports teams just locked in an endless tie game. Somewhat like that Penn State and Illinois football game that went into 9 overtimes a few years back. Do you remember that?
Yeah, isn't often that you make it to 2 overtimes, let alone 9. But anyway, that's a pretty good analogy. But let's try to tighten it up a bit. So in the chemistry world, when we talk about dynamic equilibrium in gases, we're picturing a system where at the macroscopic level, nothing seems to be changing because the forward and reverse reactions are happening at exactly the same rate. But on the molecular scale, there's constant motion. Molecules react, form products. Products break back down into reactants, all happening simultaneously and continually.
We see that in classic examples like ammonia synthesis, in the Haber-Bosch process, where you mix nitrogen and hydrogen gases, expecting to get all ammonia. But yeah, that's not how it works out. Some nitrogen and hydrogen stick around at equilibrium. So it's like the reaction doesn't go to 100% completion, but instead finds this balanced, ongoing back and forth.
And this balance is different for every reaction. Sometimes, like with ammonia, you always have some reactants left. But other times, take hydrogen and chlorine combining to make hydrogen chloride. At equilibrium, it's virtually all product, barely any reactant. And then there are reactions like forming hydrogen iodide, where there's a decent mix at equilibrium. So it's not one size fits all, you know? Let me bring in an analogy I like. A closed soda can. Picture this. When you shake a sealed can of soda, there's carbon dioxide both dissolved in the liquid and as gas above the liquid. The gas is constantly dissolving into the liquid, while at the same time, carbon dioxide is escaping from the liquid into the gas phase. Even though it seems still, molecules are swapping places all the time. What you see macroscopically is, well, not much, but microscopically it's chaos, but balanced chaos at that. That's dynamic equilibrium.
Yeah, and Ben, I love that example because it's not static. A truly closed system like that soda can, it's always adjusting. If you change something, like opening the can so the pressure suddenly drops, the equilibrium is disturbed and you see those bubbles rush out, right? Suddenly the system's out of balance, and it has to establish a new equilibrium under the changed conditions. The whole process is ongoing, never frozen in time.
Exactly. And even with seemingly complete reactions, like with hydrogen chloride, dynamic equilibrium is still there, in theory. It's just that at equilibrium, essentially all the reactants are gone, but there's still a microscopic rate of decomposition matching the reverse reaction. Even if the concentrations are vanishingly small, it's a neat illustration that equilibrium is about rates being equal, not about having equal amounts of everything.
So, to sum up, dynamic equilibrium in gas phase reactions means all the reactions are happening, forward and reverse, at matched rates. The system looks still, but it's always moving beneath the surface. And what you get at equilibrium, product, reactant, or some mixture,
So let's talk about what happens when you mess with the system by changing temperature, pressure, volume, or how much stuff you start with. The big idea here is Le Chatelier's principle. If you stress an equilibrium system, the system responds in a way that opposes the stress. Like that's the chemistry equivalent of saying, you know, if you push me, I'll push back. You know, we're...
Yeah. And for gas phase reactions, changing in volume is a classic one. Let's go back to the decomposition of dinitrogen tetroxide to nitrogen dioxide. If you take the equilibrium mixture and suddenly expand the volume, that drops the pressure. So the system will shift to increase the number of gas molecules. Here, it'll make more nitrogen dioxide because there are 2 nitrogen dioxide molecules produced for each dinitrogen tetroxide that decomposes. So, increasing volume equals more nitrogen dioxide at equilibrium.
Right, the math backs that up too. If you look at the equilibrium expression, expanding volume changes the partial pressures and the system adjusts by favoring the side with more gas molecules. And if you crunch the numbers for the ammonia synthesis, like we talked about earlier, increasing the volume actually means fewer ammonia molecules at equilibrium. That's because the reaction goes from more moles of gas to fewer moles of gas. So the direction of shift always depends on which side of the equation has more total gas molecules.
Because changing the volume essentially changes the pressure. You see similar changes when the pressure is changed. But don't forget temperature. If you raise the temperature, the system pushes the equilibrium to absorb that extra heat. For endothermic reactions, increasing temperature means you get more product at equilibrium. For exothermic ones, increasing temperature favors the reactants.
Yeah, and the numbers can be drastic. Sometimes you can crank the temperature up and the equilibrium constant will drop by several orders of magnitude. I always think of these as kind of chemical levers. You can adjust volume, pressure, or temperature, and the system pivots in a direction that tries to counterbalance your change.
And let's not leave out the starting amounts, right? The composition you start with, the ratios of reactants and products, also affects what happens when everything settles. If you pile in heaps of one reactant, the system will balance itself back to the equilibrium ratio. But those initial conditions definitely affect the final amounts you'll see at the end.
Yeah, you can see why industrial chemists get obsessed with these details. Every change can shift yields and determine costs or efficiency in real settings. But at the end of the day, Le Chatelier's principle is your guides.
All right, so let's take this out of theory land and into the real world. If you want an example of gas phase equilibrium mattering to everyone, look no further than ammonia synthesis for fertilizer, the Haber-Bosch process. We've touched on it before, but Ben, honestly, it's the reason a huge chunk of the Earth's population has enough food. What's wild to me is that industrial chemists had to figure out how to basically game equilibrium to maximize ammonia yield.
Yeah, absolutely. Think about it. They push the process at high pressures and moderately high temperatures. Why? Because making ammonia from nitrogen and hydrogen reduces the number of gas molecules, so high pressure helps make more product, shifting the equilibrium their way. But the temperature is trickier. The reaction is exothermic, so lower temperature favors ammonia formation. However, if you go too cold, the reaction is just painfully slow. So they landed on a compromise. High-ish pressure, high-ish temperature, and a catalyst to speed things up.
And they're not the only ones in industry making these kinds of decisions. Making hydrogen for fuel cells starts with steam reforming methane. That's a gas phase reaction too. And again, the yields depend drastically on equilibrium conditions. Even airbags in cars, those deploy in a split second thanks to a rapid gas-producing reaction. You wouldn't want an incomplete reaction there, believe me.
And what's cool is, if you break down any of these industrial processes, they're all about manipulating equilibrium. Chemists change pressures, adjust how much of each component gets tossed in, tweak the temperature, all to squeeze out the maximum yield, or sometimes to minimize unwanted byproducts.
It really does drive home how the ideas we wrestle with on paper show up everywhere. Food, fuel, safety tech. And they all come back to dynamic equilibrium and how we can nudge those balances to our advantage. Well, that wraps our look at dynamic equilibrium in the gas phase. Thanks for listening, Ben. Always a pleasure to tackle these topics with you.
Morgan, it's always fun. We'll see you all next time. Take care, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Keep asking questions, and we'll catch you in the next episode of The Honors Element.